Hello and welcome to the Patreon vote results for 2025. Yes, we've had the big vote, and I mean, to be said, I call it the big vote. It's been a relatively low-key contest this year, as I was quite busy with our weird revels, so we were a little overstretched administratively. However, I can now share some data with you. Yes. There will be a link to a graphic for listeners, so you will be able to look at this visually if you like, though I will make this as clear as I can for the audio medium. I haven't gone into much detail about the big vote voting results in the past, partly because I made the voting system too complicated when we first started doing this all those years ago, so that the results were really ungraphable. But also because the number of votes we had were so low, it didn't really look like anything either. I mean, you know, two or three votes for pretty much every single play doesn't really make a particularly interesting graph. However, I've now had two, maybe three clear years worth of pretty straightforward data. And I've mixed that in with the older votes over time so that now it sort of looks like a thing that we can actually talk about. So first up, I know, you want to know who won. I will tell you in just a moment. We're getting there, nearly there. I will tease, it was a tiebreak situation. Yes, there were two winners of the Patreon vote. Now, the rules for a tiebreak are manifold. First off, if there is a tie, I use the playwright with the most votes to break the deadlock. Then if it's still a tie, or if it's by the same playwright, so therefore no differential, I can either just choose myself as director of this enterprise, or I can send it back to the patrons for a special final vote. And some of that's down to just pragmatic reasons about how things work. Sometimes it's very clear that I know I can produce X play better than Y play. Maybe Y play needs a longer run-up. But this year, it has been fairly straightforward. Of course, sometimes I just put as many of the plays that won into production anyway, especially if we're doing a revel season in the coming year. But that does vary from year to year at the moment. In this case, the deadlock was easily settled, as one of the playwrights had a solid number of preference votes. So, the two plays in the tiebreak were Friar Bacon and Friar Bungay by Robert Greene and The Spanish Tragedy by Thomas Kitt. Each had a cumulative tally of 13 votes. I know that doesn't sound like a lot. I just point out, because you can basically play, you can basically vote for about 900 to 1,000 potential plays out there, the number of people who actually vote for the same play is actually relatively low. It does tend to favour the slightly more famous end of the spectrum, but, you know, we get that. So, Friar Bacon and Friar Bungay and The Spanish Tragedy by two different authors. In this latest round of the big vote, Friar Bacon and Friar Bungay got 7 Patreon votes. Everybody wanted it. The Spanish Tragedy came close. Didn't get as many this round, but it had more votes from previous years. So, it was a tie, 13 votes each. Which playwright got the most votes? Who wanted Kidd? Who wanted Green? And so, the winner was Robert Green and Friar Bacon and Friar Bungay. 7 playwright votes for Robert Green, only 3 for Thomas Kidd. Now, this is in part, I think, because in the before plague times, we were down to do James IV and Robert Greene in general. And that shelving of that particular project meant that Robert Greene was perhaps felt to be unfinished business by a number of voters, which is fair enough. That means I now have one clear project for next year, and it's now a question of how I cut my cloth. And this is where it gets a little more interesting, and where the other votes start the other players voted for come into the mix. Even though they didn't win, maybe they will get bundled together with the winning play. Now, if we do a Revels season in the autumn of 2026, not guaranteed. Sometimes I have a fallow year. Sometimes it's just not practical to do a season. If we do a Revels season, then I'm building the season around Fryer Bacon and Fryer Bungay. Now, if we just do the play in studio, joining the various ongoing recording projects of Thomas of Woodstock and Castle of Perseverance, which will start getting work in progress edits for the patrons next year. Those were always going to be long-term projects because they have massive casts and it just takes quite a long time to get them right. They're also very long, so that's why those projects have taken a long time to get even close to where they are. And there were a number of delays that happened for our studio recording process. So they are behind schedule, Thomas of Woodstock and Castle of Severance, but they are coming along nicely. But if we don't do it in studio and we do it in Revels season, then there are additional things we can mix into that process. So let's talk through a hypothetical Revels season with these results. Five plays, one of which is Fryer Bacon and Fryer Bungay. Well, I say five plays. Usually we do four plays and then something that's a bit smaller scale, either something neoclassical or something literary, which we've adapted for a smaller cast. Now, I could, with a Revels season, put Spanish Tragedy with Fryer Bacon and Fryer Bungay. They are two famous plays from a similar point in time, coming from slightly different directions in terms of their dramaturgy, but they are two famous playwrights from the late 1580s, early 1590s. We could build a season around those two plays. They're different in tone, so it's always nice to mix up in a Revels season the tone. So we're looking for maybe complementary plays to contrast with those, or just with Fryer Bacon. Let us look at the next tier of votes. So further down the list, in joint third place, we had five plays, and these each had a tally of 9 votes each. And I've listed them in order of author preference. So the author votes then dictate where I put them in the list. Though some miss out because they don't have an ascribed author. So the joint third plays were James the Fourth, continuing from a long-standing hope of a production, A Yorkshire Tragedy, The Atheist's Tragedy, and then the famous victories of Henry V and Tancred and Gismunda. Now, none of those quite build a season, a Revels season. Now, if we've got Fryer Bacon and Fryer Bungay in the mix and the Spanish Tragedy, well, maybe we could add Henry V as a history play. But we don't really have, maybe James the Fourth as a comedy, but if we've got two green plays in a mixed season, that would be a bit odd. And we don't really have an out-and-out comedy in that. But maybe we're nudging towards a potential Revels season with that. That said, if we dropped the Spanish Tragedy, we could just do a season of Robert Greene plays. Fryer Bacon and Fryer Bungay, James the Fourth, two high-tier winners, and James the Fourth arguably should be in place anyway, because we did say we're going to do a lot of work on it in the past, and we never got round to doing that because of the plague and various other administrative reasons. But then, if we got those two plays, well, we could add the sequel to Fryer Bacon and Fryer Bungay, John of Bordeaux, into a season. We could do an evening of coney catching pamphlets because that's really good material. That'd make a lovely show. And then all I'd need to do is pick one other Robert Greene play from his putative repertoire and put it into the season. I should say that John of Bordeaux is not necessarily by Greene. There's a lot of good reasons to suggest it's just a sequel written by someone. But yeah, we could do a season. You know, it's not easy being green, and that could be a season. Another way of creating a season is to do another Weird Revels around the theme of conjuring. Fry Bacon and Fry Bungay, they're conjurers. John of Bordeaux, one of them continues doing some more conjuring. And then we could do a pamphlet text in adaptation around conjuring. There is Faustus and its sequel, and other source materials. Then we could mix in, say, The Merry Devil of Edmonton, which is a good fun play, quite light, and maybe even The Devil's Charter, if we felt ambitious. Devil's Charter is a massive text. But anyway, we could do a season around conjuring, rather than the Weird Revels, where we sort of mixed a match between witches and demons and you know, just the weird in general. Maybe just magical practitioners in a very academic kind of way would be quite an interesting season. So that's an option. I say, depends whether we do a Revel season at all. Might not happen. Or at least might not happen next year. I don't know. So let's go a little further down the voting list. In joint eighth place, with eight votes, so that's only one vote difference from the third place, we have The Island Princess, The Witch, A Chaste Maid in Cheapside, Knight of the Burning Pestle, The Tragedy of Hoffman, The White Devil, and Climon and Climides. Now, we actually haven't done first looks on a number of these yet. Had meant to squeeze Chaste Maid in Cheapside in, but it didn't happen. Same with Island Princess, and same with White Devil. And that's partly because they're actually reasonably well-known plays, and I'm trying to hold a few of those back as we're doing our first looks. We're getting now into the last 200-300 plays for first look exploring sessions, and I don't want to do all the hits, as it were, but yeah, we're going to probably clear them next year. Might clear one of them this year. I don't know yet. But yeah, because we haven't done necessarily the work on a number of those, I'm not necessarily going to put them into a seasonal mix, because I just don't necessarily... We haven't necessarily done the dramaturgical work to understand how they function enough yet. We could do it. It's difficult to tell. But again, if they could feed into an alternative Weird Revels angle for a season, we've got The Witch, which is a good witchy play. Hoffman, which is comedy tragedy. Very difficult to get the tone right there. So we could build that with Fry Bacon and Fry Bungay and do a slightly more diffuse Weird Revels season. And I say, we've got some fun comedies. Knight of the Burning Pestle, really difficult play actually to do. I'm quite glad it hasn't come through this time. I'm going to need more of a run-up to get that good. Just because, you know, it is potentially a great play doesn't mean it's an easy one to do well. And Climon and Climides is incredibly long. Well, it's not incredibly long, but it's probably too long for the joke. And some work needs to be done on that. I do want to return for a second look on that, because I do love it as a play. So again, I could do a much more eclectic Revel season mix, like our first one, where we just put in a comedy, a history, a tragedy, and something a bit odd. So going back to that earlier pitch of Fry Bacon and Fry Bungay, Spanish tragedy, famous history, famous victories of Henry V, maybe throw in an out-and-out comedy like Climon and Climides, or similar. We've got a bit of a nice mix there, and that would be quite fun. Going down the list even further to all the... I'm not going to do all the runners-up, it's okay. A lot of plays on the long list have had 2, 3, maybe 4 votes. We're not going to go down into that granular detail. But at joint 15th, with 7 votes, not far off the other runners-up listed. Is joint 15th? Have I miscounted? I don't think so. Anyway, you know, we're into the outside of the top 10 now. But again, only 1 or 2 votes different from much higher rankings. We've got Women Beware Women, The Two Parts of Edward IV, The True Tragedy of Richard III, and still clinging on there, The Two Angry Women of Abingdon. Mostly, I think that gets votes because it's got a good title. So there are a couple more history plays there in the mix, and so possibly not this year. I could happily construct a season of English history plays. Henry V, Edward IV, Richard III, and some infill. We could put in several plays there to fill in the gaps and do stuff with history. That would be fun to do. I don't think I've got a mandate to do that this year. But as we're continuing to work on Thomas of Woodstock, you know, we're filling in quite a lot of gaps here. We could do Sir John Oldcastle and things. And that would make a really interesting season of work. Now, not going to go through all the runners and riders, but new to the vote this year, got onto the long list, though none got very, very high on the list because they're new additions. And it's John Lilly. John Lilly's been doing something a bit weird. I don't know what's going on, because it's taken quite a long time for the most famous of John Lilly's plays to get voted for. So they weren't even on the long list until this year. Galatea, Sappho and Phaedo, and Love's Metamorphosis have only just joined the other John Lilly plays. And John Lilly, as a playwright, has always had a fairly high number of votes for his work, 11 votes in total as a playwright. But the winning play within his oeuvre is still Midas, with 5 votes today. And I personally really like Midas, so I have been pushing it behind the scenes. So that might be why that's artificially high, because I think it's a sort of underrated play from his more famous canon. Additions to this year, to the long list, Thomas Cromwell, Look About You, Misogynous, The End Towns sequence of mystery plays, Rhodon and Iris, a Norwich play for a flower festival, which is really quite fun, actually. Hannibal and Scipio, which we've not done a first look on, and The Birth of Merlin, which is bonkers. And it's interesting. There was definitely a lot of sustained online interest on social media about The Birth of Merlin, and then nobody actually voted for it. I think one person did. So well done there. You do need to become a patron if you want us to actually, spend money to put on the play. Sorry, that's the system, really. You bribe us and then we put it on. That's how it works. In terms of playwrights, who was the playwright everybody wants? Everybody wants. Everybody votes every year. And I think has been pretty high in the rankings pretty much every year. I think this is second winning year in a row. I'll explain why I say weirdly in a moment. So the highest ranking playwright with 12 votes is Thomas Dekker. And the reason why I say it's weird is because no one actually ever votes for his actual place. So they vote for the platonic ideal of Thomas Dekker. And then apart from Shoemaker's Holiday, which so far has 6 votes in total, nobody has actually bothered to actually choose any of his plays. So I think there might be a couple of multi-author plays that he's technically been voted for. But, you know, in terms of his own work, that's it. In terms of genre, always a slightly messy statistic in the listings. Tragedy is the genre most people want with 20 votes. Comedy is close second at 19, though generally people vote in terms of the actual plays they vote for. They generally vote for more tragedies than comedies. I think that's true. I haven't actually double-checked that statistic, but that's sort of how it looks to me. Which, considering actually how many comedies there are in relation to how many tragedies there are, I find an interesting statistic. Next down that list is with 16 votes, is history plays. The Inns of Court are next with 10 votes. There's definitely a high interest in tragedy and comedy. Then it sort of dips a bit to history and then down to the other slightly less sexy genres. Morality and interlude drama have been voted for 9 and 8 respectively, but because that's a split genre, so morality plays and interlude plays, there's a lot of overlap there. Not every interlude drama is a morality play, and not every morality play is an interlude drama. But if you combine those two votes together, they would have 17 votes combined, making arguably, moral interludes, the third place genre above history. I'm going to stick to splitting the difference because actually I think there is a difference in interest there. And I don't think genuinely as many people want morality and interlude drama than history or you know other genres there. Everything else bimbles around at the bottom there. If we continue to grow, I am winding up now. If we continue to grow as a group and an organization, you know, we are very much a podcast run by me, your host, Robert Crichton. But if we do continue to grow and our production ability increases, then the question of, am I doing a Revel season this year, changes to the point where, am I doing two Revel seasons a year? And that takes us from 4 to 5 plays performed live plus whatever else I can do to complement in studio, you know, up to 8 to 10. For the record, I have recorded elements, not including fragments and tiny stuff. I have recorded elements or in full 20 plays this year. They're not all coming out this year, not all coming out next year. But yeah, we've recorded and can record a lot. And if we do them live and we do live Revel seasons, then I can turn them around and get them out to you quicker. So yeah, the question shifts from, am I doing a Revel season? I am doing a Revel season. I am doing more than one Revel season. And that's all within reach, very much within reach. And that's down to our patrons, past, present, and future, who have supported our work. And if you're a patron listening now, thank you for your support and your choices that led to this, the winning a play of Fry Bacon and Fry Bungay. If you're a listener on the podcast, casual or regular, thank you for your ears and your time. Do consider joining the Patreon feed and supporting our work, even as a free subscriber, where you'll get our monthly roundups and a chance to, you know what's coming up, because there are a lot of things coming up. So I'm in the process of figuring out how to make Fry Bacon and Fry Bungay happen next year. I don't know yet. I am assuming we will record it effectively in one go after a short rehearsal period, rather than piecemeal. That may be just in a studio, that might be live. I'd like to do it live. I'd like to do it as part of a Revel season towards the end of the year. But I don't know yet. There are other projects, other irons in the fire for next year, live shows. And as I say, if you're a subscriber, a free subscriber on the Patreon, or join our mailing list, then you'll be kept up to speed with that. We have a number of shows planned for next year, one very, very big one already, which is not based on patron vote. That's based on another factor, because there is another exciting thing happening for our patrons from April next year. There will be an exciting thing happening, definitely by April, if not before. We have a development that will be nice for our lovely patrons, including free subscribers as well. So you will get a chance to to get some goodies. We're working on some goodies for you now. You as listeners and supporters, if you're just listening to the podcast, do share it, do pass it around, do tell your friends, get more ears on us. The more ears there are, the easier it is also for us to get money from other people. It's always nice to persuade somebody else to pay for things. So if you can even just, nudge other people, that makes a difference. If, however, you can become a patron and support our work, then do so. You'll be able to vote at our next big vote and choose the plays that we work on next. You all make this happen. Thank you so much. There will be a full end of year roundup, which will cover some of this, but mostly new stuff at the end of the year, end of the year roundup, where I've got a lot to say about what we've done and what we're going to do. But for now, I've been your host, Robert Crichton, and now I'm off to fry you some bacon. Sizzle, sizzle, fry. Pass the buns.